This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yeah, I agree with the texter here. Manning has said that stuff before about receivers in the shower. He said it on Peyton's Places. Not anything new. Yeah, he's just trying to get buzz. I mean, I heard Eli made the forehead, five-head joke. I mean, like, that joke is, like, how old?
You watched a lot of this.
No, I watched a couple minutes. That's what I saw. I saw a minute or so of Gronk, a minute or so of McAfee, and then just them talking about the five-head. I was like, oh, my God. Like, that's like a Brock Heward joke.
I'll be honest. I completely had forgotten about it until you sent a text.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I thought it was just week one. It's every week.
I'm so glad I remembered. I got a couple of minutes, and now I don't have to do that again. It is the Mike Salk Show here at 710 ESPN Seattle. Reminder, tomorrow at this time, if you are a 9 o'clock listener or available in this time, Matt Hasselbeck joins us for the second edition of the Matt Hasselbeck Show, 9 to 10. Last week was awesome. Honestly, one of my favorite hours. It really was fun. And listening to Matt just tell stories. And yeah, he's talking a little bit about the current Seahawks and the current NFL. But his ability to refer back to his own experiences, take you inside the game, and honestly tell things that you haven't heard before about people you know, is really great. I mean, Matt, and he's a riot. Matt's just naturally funny and charismatic. If you missed the first one, go download the podcast from last Wednesday and then check it out tomorrow live at 9 o'clock here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I think it's very likely we've seen the low point from Jared Kelnick and that he'll never again go through what we've seen this year. I think we may have seen the nadir. We may have seen the bottom of the trough for Jared Kelnick, thank God, because obviously it got rough. He's had one of the worst starts to a major league career you can have, certainly from a batting average perspective, etc. But over the last 3 weeks, we've seen a completely different player. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you he won't have another 0-for-4 night. He did last night, and he'll have more of them. And he'll have some slumps, and he'll go up and down over the rest of his career. But I don't think we'll ever see him do what he's done over the first few months of his season. And I think things now start to move forward for him. And to believe that, let me kind of take you through that. Because in order to believe that Kelnick is going to continue to improve or that he's reached that point now, you have to first believe, I think, the Mariners did the right thing with him this year. And I think there's an open question on that. Should they have brought him up when they did? Should they have left him in the minor leagues for longer, et cetera? And I think at this point, I will say that he did truly benefit from being in the big leagues most of the year. And here's why. One, he had nothing left to prove in AAA. He clobbered that league. He really did.
For the short time he was there, yes.
When he was in AAA, he beat it up. He was just too good for that league. And I think unlike previous years, the gap between the majors and AAA is larger than it used to be.
I would say especially in pitching more than anything.
Yes, but I mean, for a couple of reasons why. Think about it. You have larger rosters in the big leagues. It used to be 25-man rosters. Now you got 26. So that's, 30 guys that used to be the best in AAA that are now in the big leagues. You also have more injuries, and especially with what happened with COVID this year and guys on the COVID list. So every time there's an injury or every time somebody's on the IL or the COVID list or whatever it is, that's another AAA player, the best players at AAA that are getting sucked up into the majors. So what do you have right now at AAA? You've got essentially, and this is just from talking to folks in the game, a combination of journeyman minor leaguers and really probably two young prospects. So that's what AAA's become. It's not what it used to be. AAA's always been a little confusing, right? The best prospects are AA, and then AAA tends to be a way station. You've got veterans on the way down after being in the big leagues, and you've got young players who are stopping off on their way up. And occasionally you'll have some guys that are frustrated. And so you don't want your prospects at AAA too long because they can pick up bad habits from folks that are bitter. Right. That are not in the best shape. Like AA is where you want your prospects because that's where everybody's coming up together. AAA. Yeah. You want to test it out there, but you don't want your guys there for too long, because if you run into some of those guys, stupid pass around, you run into those guys in AAA. I was in the big leagues and I'm not back because this guy's, not there. They're bitter. So you can't have them in AAA very long. AAA is not as good as it normally is. He was dominating pitching at AAA, And then finally, this would be the third reason, you can start to really get away with bad habits, and because they work, right? You can swing at a bad ball in AAA and hit it for a double, whereas that's not close in the major leagues. The gap, again, the gap between the big leagues and AAA has never been larger than it is right now. So what was the value in keeping him there? He needed to learn. He needed to find out about his bad habits that he wasn't going to learn about in AAA. So I buy it. I buy that bringing him up was the right decision. But the next part of the argument, I think, has to do with his age. He's going to play next year at 22. Most great players start to get great right at about that age, 22, 23, regardless of when they come up, whether it's AAA, when they hit about 22, 23, the really good players start to be great. So even if he's more of a fringe all-star type, next year is likely the year he starts to tread water as a good player for the next couple of years before starting to break out around 25, 26. Guy like J.P. Crawford, right, who treaded water a little bit, and then finally 25, 26, he starts to really become the guy he is. And that's what Crawford is, right? Kind of a fringe all-star kind of a player. The hope for Kelnick is that he's better than that, that he's a regular all-star, maybe an MVP candidate, and then we'll see after that. And if that's the case, I think we'll start to see it in the next year, and we'll really know by 2023 if that's truly who he is. So Kelnick's path might be a little different from some of the stars who have played before him, partially because they played in a better minor league world. When they were in the minors, the leagues were better. So they could afford to develop in the minor leagues, and maybe they would learn about some of their bad habits because there were fewer players in the majors, only 25-man rosters, fewer injuries, right? Fewer just journeyman nothings, guys from the Atlantic League or hanging out now in AAA.
When you say, how many years ago is this? Is this 5, 10? Like, what is
just a couple? I mean, honestly, in some ways, two. I mean, like, in the last couple of years, things have drastically changed by adding another player to the roster. When did they go to a 26-man roster? 2 or 3 years ago? At the most.
Yeah, I asked you this last week, and I think it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Just a couple of years ago. So, I mean, that's a new thing. The COVID thing, obviously, is very new in the last year or so. Nobody got to practice last year in the minor leagues. So his development is a little funky from everybody's else, but this is the age that traditionally great players start to figure it out, 22, 23 years old. And so if next year he takes that big leap, and maybe it's at 23, but over the next 2 years he takes the big leap, and then we see maybe another leap around 26, 27, that's when you know you've really got a guy. Right? Maybe a Hall of Famer type.
And Mariner fans who are quick to just be like, oh, Kelnick's trash, let's get over it. How many times are we going to do this?
Stop. He's 21 years old.
I did 20. Yeah, 22.
Get out of here with that.
He's born
anybody
in 1999.
Please do not come at me with any of that. He's trash? No.
But when you hear that over, and it's like, I get it. This is just indicative of a fan base that feels like they need something now. They want immediate gratification. They want the playoffs tomorrow.
Then they should
I
hear this.
Get it.
Swing and he mashes this out to right center field. This is on the track. Taylor watching and it's gone. Kelnick going deep in case. See again. It's his third round tripper of the series and his third run batted in today.
I think that was the curveball on the outside corner that he just straight up muscled into center field. That dude's some kind of strong. Yeah, I'm not worried about that. And that's not to say that we didn't see things this year that were below our expectation level. Yeah, of course. I don't mind any Mariner fan who's got questions. I've got some questions. Right, I don't think he's guaranteed next year to take off and become a great one. I'm saying that I don't think he goes backwards from here, and I think next year we should start to see what he's truly capable of. But look, a lot of this is up to him. How much does he tinker with his swing? We saw Kyle Seager go through years of up and down and tinker with this and tinker with that. How much does Kelnick tinker, or is he kind of get it and go with it? Does he trust people around him? Is he going to listen to anybody? Will he listen to his manager? Will he listen to his hitting coach? Will he listen to the film guy? Will he listen to DePoto or Andy McKay or somebody? Is there someone who can reach him? Can he get the defense figured out? I don't know if he's a center fielder. In fact, I don't think he's a center fielder. He can kind of hang there. But does he get the defense figured out so that that's not an issue? Can he handle the spotlight? It's a real question all of a sudden.
Right.
Right? I mean, he was thrust into it, I think, a little bit unfairly this year. Well, maybe the Mariners brought him up at the right time. I thought they put a little pressure on him by having him hit leadoff when he first came up.
Now,
I didn't agree with
it
then, and I don't agree with it now. I thought they should have dumped him at the bottom of the lineup and let him work his way back in. But it was a different time then, honestly, and the Mariners were getting no hit by guys you'd never heard of. So maybe that's why they felt they needed to. I just disagree with it.
Well, Jerry said maybe he can provide a spark, and I thought that was a ton of pressure to put on him.
I totally agree with that, and I have a lot of respect for Jerry. I thought they blew that one. I thought they didn't handle his entree into the big leagues the right way. But a last question for him is, can he have fun? Can he have fun playing the game of baseball? It's an incredibly – baseball's a slog. It's not played once a week. It's played over 162. Yes, you've got to have a level of intensity. You have to. And I think Kelnick can be a really important piece as a grinder and somebody who lives it and is competitive every at bat. That's important. He doesn't give away at bats. But can you smile? Can you enjoy it? Because if not, you eventually the game will eat you up. And we've just seen too many guys over the years. And that's not to say that he's got to change his whole personality. I don't want him to do that. And I'm not like mad at him for not smiling. But if you've seen it the last couple days, you know, little fly ball falls in. He catches it right there, right up against J.P. Crawford, where either one of them could have caught it. Usually you'll see a guy flip it to his buddy and then a little joke and off they'll go. No.
Yeah. And I don't want to put too much stock in that either. But you're right. I would like, it's like when the bass player goes over to the drummer and they kind of do that little like giggle inside joke thing. And you're like, look at these guys. Look at that.
Yeah, they're having fun.
Look at this chemistry.
Yeah.
I don't want to put too much stock into not seeing those kinds of things. But you're right. When you think of like a 22-year-old kid, you remember being 22.
Yeah.
So the last 4 years of your life have been nothing but transition. You've never gotten to live in one place for longer than a certain amount of time. You just start learning how to do all these things on your own. You haven't found a groove or a real lane outside of just always being the biggest fish in the pond in his experience. Now it's like, okay, you're here for a long time. Get comfortable.
Yeah.
Settle in.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen some of that's a really good point. By the way, I love the bass player thing. Do you like that better, or do you like when the two guitars and the singer all go off together and like move in a coordinated fashion?
No, I love the inside. The drummer kind of smiles and they do like always do the
little head groove.
The head thing, or like one of them will kind of like do the thing with their tongue, like kiss, you know, they're like, yes, isn't this fun? Because their hands are busy and
I don't know, man.
That nonverbal communication. I love it.
I like three guitarists to get like I saw the Scorpions years ago and like they brought out all the rock cliches and they did that. They're like all together, like bouncing back and forth, three guitars.
It goes between that and the two lead guitar players soloing back to back.
Oh, that's
those are
great.
The other two.
You don't see
ones.
Enough of that though. That's actually really fun.
That's very cool.
I'm all in on that. I hope he can smile. I hope he can enjoy it. Not because I think he's doing anything wrong, but because I think baseball, and this is just what I've heard from every player I've talked to over the years and people in the game, is it can be a slog. It can eat you up. And if you're not enjoying it, and I think he is. I think he does enjoy the game. I think he loves baseball. I really do. I think he loves the game. I think he lives for it. I think he's competitive. I think he does laugh with his teammates off the field. I think what he needs is a couple of big moments.
Right.
He needs that ball to fall in against the Red Sox last Wednesday instead of going a foot foul and have him be the hero, because that's what he's accustomed to being, the hero.
And the other thing, and I think I mentioned this to you already, is let's play into what the fan perception of him is for a second. If you see him on the field jumping, laughing, having a great time, and the fans are going, you're hitting 167. I want you to be better.
Could be. It could be.
Like,
yeah.
He's got all the pressure on him right now, and some of it's self-inflicted. But
yep. No win situation. You kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. You got a text message here that says, do you think his teammates don't like him? Nope. I think his teammates like him. I have no indication whatsoever that they don't like him or that he doesn't like them. I'm sure that I'm sure everything is hunky-dory. But he is intense. It's really just about him. He's the future. He's the kid. He's the guy with the goods, him and Julio. They're the two guys who are elite level prospects. And I think he's got the right mentality to be a great one. I just hope that he can have fun enough to sustain it. 9:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Pete Carroll is in a different state of mind this week than we're accustomed to seeing him. Even after a loss, he's clearly not just going to sit back and let this Seahawks season get away from him, which is what happened in the fourth quarter on Sunday. I've interviewed Pete, I don't know how many times over the years, and what I heard yesterday was a coach that was bothered by an early season loss, more so than I'm accustomed to hearing, and one who's going to start holding some people accountable. We heard about a benching of Jordan Brooks for a late hit, Pete saying that he was willing to use the bench as an ally in order to make sure guys are playing the game smart. We heard him talk about Russell Wilson and question some of the throws and decisions that were made at the end of the game. We heard him embed inside a compliment of Bobby Wagner some comments about how many tackles came after completions were made in the zone late in the game. So That's a coach who's willing to start having some accountability conversations. I know that's not necessarily Pete's reputation, but I would argue that hidden under the positivity, hidden under all of the optimism, is the same guy who cut Lendale White for showing up late to however many practices and meetings, because accountability is still important. You've got to protect the team, and I think Pete's doing a really good job of that right now. In the meantime, not so interested in Richard Sherman. Very blunt in saying that he had had no conversations with the former Seahawk at this time, although he certainly did leave the door open for a change at cornerback. Sidney Jones, you would hope, would be competing for some playing time with Trey Flowers this week. And why is all this important? Because this Seahawks team's talented. Really talented. This team could be special. Honestly, that's what we saw in week one. That doesn't go away because you blew the game in the fourth quarter of week two. They got a lot of talent in the offensive side of the ball. All kinds of talent, certainly, in the specialist spots. They get a defensive group with a lot of speed. So, yeah, they're talented enough to go very far. But they're not, like, so much more talented than everybody else around them that they can afford to make that road harder than it has to be with the dumb penalties and bad decisions. And so in a division that is going to be excellent, and already all of those teams are 2-0, you cannot have the kind of mistakes they made Sunday against the Titans. Pete knows that, and now it's up to him to correct it.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, we talked about Jared Kelnick and where he's going. How about where his team's at? They find a way to get a win in Oakland last night. Of course, this team is not going to go quietly into the night. They win the first of four there, and it was all the familiar names who got it done. Crawford, Haniger, France, Seager. Top four guys in your order. A combined 8 for 15 in the game. Four doubles, all four runs driven in. They cruise to a 4-2 victory. All right, maybe they didn't quite cruise. It did get close late. Couple of dinky ground balls off of Castillo, and the next thing you know, you need Paul Sewald in the game for a 5-out save. He got Matt Olson, struck him out with 2 on in the 8th. Really great slider, so unbelievable outing from Sewald. 16 of 17 pitches were strikes. Don't overlook Tyler Anderson, their deadline acquisition. Had his best outing, going 7 innings. Really, really great outing for Tyler Anderson. Said after the game he had not had any talks about re-signing here in Seattle, although I'm sure that the Mariners would have at least a little bit of interest in that. He did say he's pretty comfortable and has been very happy here. So the Blue Jays lose. Mariners get to back within 3 games of the wild card. Of course, 3 teams still ahead of them to leapfrog. They get back to it against the A's. 6:40 first pitch tonight here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, you ready? You're going to repeat after me this time. I will not overreact to week 1 of the NFL season. I will not overreact to week 1 of the NFL season. I will not overreact to week 1 of the NFL season. Well, Aaron Rodgers is going to remind you if you forget. Gave us example number 1 gazillion of that. Shook off whatever rust he had showed last week in an easy pull-away victory over the hapless Lions. 35-17 the final score. Rodgers was really efficient. 22 of 27 in this one for 255 yards. And of course, he added 4 touchdowns as well. Looking around the NFL, we may see some injured quarterbacks. Looks like Justin Fields has a chance to start for Andy Dalton this week in Chicago. It sounds like you may have a quarterback change potentially in Las Vegas, as Derek Carr has suffered an injury. And then David Mills may get a start for Houston.
Davis.
Darn it. I actually thought I got it right instead of
also
making
also just
fun.
Saw that Roethlisberger has a pectoral injury.
Of course
lots
he does.
Lots of quarterbacks.
He'll play, though. Ben will play. Just a couple of shots of the pack and see him warming up. And then
I'm
we'll
so
get
tough.
The ankle.
He's a hero. Here he comes.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about Ben playing.
Fighting through the grit.
But Davis Mills will play for Houston after Tyrod Taylor's going to miss some time. Poor Tyrod Taylor. Finally comes out with a really good start to the season, and unfortunately, he finds himself injured again. And then breaking news, I'm getting old, apparently. I tried. I watched as much as I could of the Manning cast last night when I wasn't watching the Mariners. I just didn't like it. And it wasn't them. I just don't think I like the format. I found it disjointed and talking over each other. Like, I don't want to watch guys watching the game. I want to watch the game.
I mean, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Well, apparently that was me. And more guys in tank tops than I was expecting on national TV. Those are 3 things you need to know. Do it every hour.
Your bitter minor league guy voice from the 360 just brought back flashbacks to the bitter beer face guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was trying to say it in a way that was sort of clean. Like being, I don't know that bitter minor league guy is as clean as I made him out to be.
Sure.
Right? He's embittered. He's been, you know, he's been up, he's been down. He knows how that, you know, he's probably never going to truly make it. Minor league life, he's on back on buses. He knows what he's missing from the show.
He's had a taste of it.
Right.
Yeah,
and so
backwards.
He's just kind of embittered. He feels like somebody, you know, the powers that be have kept him from great success. And you just don't watch your true prospects around that guy for very
I like
long.
That instead of that, Kelnick and Gilbert got Paul Sewald because
yes.
he got brought up at the same time as them. And I just remember him going on Wyman and Bob and saying, like, yeah, we were playing this team the other day and the pitcher that came out was 30. And Kelnick was like, oh, my God, can you believe that guy's 30? And Paul Sewald was like, know your audience, bro.
Sewald seems like a great dude, doesn't he?
He's very funny.
Don't know the guy. Love him on Twitter. Aaron Goldsmith pointing out last night that he was their game one opening day starter for Tacoma this year. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Started opening day for the Rainiers, and obviously, I mean, what he's done for this team is remarkable. Did you watch him last night? I like Sewald in general, so I'm predisposed to like what he does. But he comes into a spot, and they'd identified Matt Olson. I know this. Matt Olson's the best hitter on the A's. If you want to beat the A's, which the Mariners have done pretty handily this year, you've got to shut down Matt Olson. That's the key to that lineup. And so when he comes up with a couple of runners on and only one out in the eighth, all of a sudden, that game gets real tight. Well, you turn to Paul Sewald earlier than you'd like to, but he's your guy to go get Matt Olson, and he gets two strikes on him before doing this.
The runner at first represents the tying run of the ball game. Here's the pitch, slider, strike three called, right on the outside corner at the knees. Holy smokes, what a pitch from Paul Sewald striking out Matt Olson. And I'm telling you, he dots that outside corner with the backdoor slider. And a huge strikeout for Sewald, two outs.
That's a good call from Riz, and he's absolutely right. It's just what he did. Little backdoor slider, dotted the eye, put a pitcher's pitch, right? You had him 0-2, you don't need to throw a strike, and he puts one just off the edge, maybe just a hair low, but it gets called a strike. And I thought Brent was absolutely right, Brent Stecker, our guy on Twitter, saying, hey man, protect the plate. If you don't like it, protect the plate. There's two strikes, and you know this guy's got that kind of stuff. He's had Olson's number, and he had it again last night. So kudos to Paul Sewald. And look, three games back, is it likely? No. Blue Jays are good. Yankees are good. Red Sox are good. They're all ahead of you.
But is it fun?
Is it worth watching? Yeah. It's absolutely worth paying attention to, because who knows? Maybe the impossible happens. And in the meantime, I just love how hard they play. By the way, like, you know, they could have, especially Kelnick. Kelnick, we were talking about him earlier. That guy has the brutal strikeout to end the Red Sox series, essentially, right? Where he doesn't come through. And you could really be down on, like, he could have gotten down on himself and this and that. And instead, his next two games are his two best as a pro. I think that says something.
Back,
and
right.
So, yeah, the bounce back, we'll talk about
it's a
his
goldfish.
Intensity. Yeah, he's a goldfish, like the Ted Lasso thing, right? He's a goldfish. He forgets about it. But also, we can talk about whether the intensity is a good or a bad thing. If it doesn't affect his ability and he doesn't carry one thing to the next, if he can be a goldfish in addition to being intense and competitive, well, then good for him. It sure seems to be working for him. All right, Brock Heward coming up here in just a moment. He got to listen to Pete, and I think he and I came away with some similar points of view on just how urgent Pete feels right now. It's coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Heward says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Yeah! 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 Good morning, Brock. Hello, Brock.
Good morning,
Brock.
Oh, Michael.
There you are. All right. I thought we'd lost you.
But is it a good morning?
It is a good morning. It's a great morning.
Good.
Yeah, we're having a good morning. We're having a lot of fun today, other than these guys like pulling sound of me saying the Huskies might lose. You didn't need to do that. I'd said it on the FM station, for God's sakes. I thought I was safe over there to say all sorts of dumb stuff. But no, Justin found it and brought it on over and made me eat the L. So thanks a lot. Really appreciate it.
Did you eat your fingers, though? That's
no.
That's not good hygiene.
It's disgusting.
You can don't eat the W, don't eat the L.
Nope.
Don't do that.
I won't
don't
do anything like
your fingers
that.
Fingers in your mouth.
Hey, did you hear any of Pete? He was, I found him to be very different than the Pete that I remember talking to after a loss. I didn't hear any of the kind of warm, comforting, everything is going to be okay. He was, I thought, critical of Russ, critical of Bobby, critical of his team, holding them accountable, benched a player. That's not the Pete that I'm
hold
used to
on,
hearing.
Hold on. Critical of Bobby?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, he spoke a little bit to what you said. I mean, again, it's Pete, and he's a coach, and he's a smart coach, so
yes,
you can kind of read into it. I'll play it for you. I mean, he said all the right things about all the plays Bobby made, but also mentioned a lot of the plays made in his zone late in the game.
It was a spectacular day of playing ball. I mean, he was matching up with Derrick Henry, you know, Bobby had Donald's. What he told him out of play, played every play, but he was trying to match up with Henry and see if he could, you know, just keep him from getting out, which I thought he did a fantastic job. Too many checkdowns late in the game, you know, that they kind of controlled the ball a little bit. We were trying to stay on their wide receivers, and the ball didn't go outside. It kept going inside and just to the dump offs. Bobby got a bunch of tackles on those checkdowns.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He did a phenomenal job in the run game. He played physical. He played hard. But he has been, and I think I said this to you early in the year, my biggest concern is the cornerback position and those guys willing to play man in the second level of the pass defense. That the Jordan Brooks is still an incredibly young player, that you lose KJ Wright's savviness and his awareness. And yes, KJ has lost a step, but he also plays a step faster than those inexperienced guys because of all of those years, Mike. Mm-hmm. And Bobby is a challenge for me in pass coverage. I just don't see him ever matching. Just because you play zone doesn't mean you just drop into outer space. You know, you drop into a zone, but then you understand what they're trying to do. What are they trying to do to you in that zone coverage? Are they trying to bait you? Are they going to hook somebody right up in your zone and throw and whistle it behind you on 3rd and 15? Then, you know what? Play deep. But you've got to have some awareness of what's going on around you. And for a decade, man, for all of the years of playing zone defense and pass defense, he does not have that savviness that KJ Wright has in that passing concept.
So more than that, though, when you hear that, Brock, and again, he didn't crush Bobby or anything close
not
to
at all.
It, but nope. That's Pete being, I think, a little more honest, right, about what's going on in the zone. He couches it with some of the great stuff Bobby does, which
sure.
is fair, because Bobby did a lot of great things in that game also. Yep. He mentions that he needed more from Russ in those last couple of drives and that he wished he had checked it down and that they needed
yes.
that to go differently.
Good.
He mentions benching Jordan Brooks. So, look, you can make a pretty clear line of all these different things together. My question is why? Why is Pete talking that way?
Because he knows that Tennessee is good, but they're not great. He knows if they play that game, Mike, in their division, they're going to finish 3rd or 4th. Man, he knows that. He is savvy enough to know that, man, this is an AFC team that we have on the ropes, that you're up by 14 freaking points in the 4th quarter, right? That they bust that coverage. They gifted you a touchdown, and you're up by 14 in your building. And what is it, just the second time? I was there in 2004 with the Rams debacle that you lost. That was it. 17 years. You have a 4th quarter lead, and that's with Holmgren. That's with Jim Mora. Right, so he knows how hard it is to have a 14-point lead
in your building.
To be
fair to Jim, he never had the 14-point lead to blow. I mean, you know, at least Pete's had a lot of these leads to blow.
I'll boo you. I'll come into that studio and I'll boo you right to your face right now.
Thanks, Jim.
So he knows how they kicked it away, Mike, and knows that, yeah, Bobby played a role in that in the 4th quarter. Russ played a role in that in the 4th quarter.
Yep.
Your captains, your best players that needed to stop the bleeding in that moment, right, they did not do that. And I think that's why he was fairly transparent yesterday.
What do you think the conversations are this week between Russ and Shane Waldron?
That can't happen.
No, I mean, but like, what are they talking about?
No, seriously, that can't happen.
All right, like, but like moving forward, like, what are they doing yep. about the future? What are their conversations about the future? Sorry.
Yeah, we've got to handle some of those pressure situations better. We've got to handle some of the check with me stuff better. You know, our 3rd downs for 2 weeks now, Salk, they weren't great in Indianapolis. You didn't even really look at them because everything else was. But that's now back-to-back weeks where your 3rd downs aren't championship caliber. That money down, that's so important. So I think situationally that's probably where the conversation is. And let's be frank about it. They've not been in those moments together. Right? They have not had that's Russell, you know, checking plays and doing things in a new language that is new to him. You know, this is a little bumpiness that I thought we would see. That was another area. This isn't like a tell you so Tuesday, but I thought I made it pretty clear leading up to the start of this season. My concern was in coverage, and my concern is that this is not going to just be an easy ride offensively. There will be bumps in the road. You have not worked together. You've not had those moments together. And, you know, this was hopefully a little bit of scar tissue, hopefully a callus that was built a little bit through some situational football that you're going to be better the next time around with it.
You think Jared Kelnick's turned a corner?
The numbers sure tell you he has. I mean, the bottom line, you know, stats of baseball that we love to look at. And more than that, yeah, I think he just I saw your tweets last night. We've had this conversation. We've talked about it in our podcast for quite a while about Jared and his personality, right? And his intensity. It's not waned.
No. It was really
it is not waned a blink through ups and downs, through benchings, through being sent
He's
down,
intense,
coming
man.
Back up.
I just noticed three times in the last few yes. last week and twice yesterday. Like, you know when there's a fly ball where that brings two guys close together? I don't mean when they almost collide, but like two guys end up within a few feet of each other. That happened twice yesterday, and usually one will kind of flip the ball to the other and there's a little joke and they smile and then off they go. None of it. Like, he catches the ball and he's like, mm-hmm. Like, he just like, well, and I'm not trying to start
I mean, the
anything.
Guy in right field kind of does the same thing, let's be honest.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, he's not exactly Mr. Sunshine and laughter and puppies out there. That's for that. You're absolutely right. But it strikes me, not that he's got a problem with his teammates at all. I don't think he does, even a little bit. And my understanding is he does have a lot of fun off the field. It just seems like a hard way to play 162 a year.
Yes, it's grind. It's a grind. And in this rookie year has been a grind. So has he turned a corner? I'll tell you at the end of the season here, as we're coming down to it with a dozen games to go or so, that you just love. I love that intensity. I know you have a little nervousness about it, whether you can do that for 162 games every single season and what that means to your teammates and what the rest of them who do not have maybe that similar wiring.
Well, I can love it and be nervous about it at the same time, if that makes sense. I do love it. And you do need some guys on your team wired in an intense way. The question is, can he find a balance that allows him to make it sustainable for 162 every year and also with his teammates while still driving them to be serious and focused and everything else? And I think when you balance him with guys like Kyle Lewis and J.P. Crawford and eventually Julio Rodriguez, I think that you can get like a combo of joy and intensity and a Mitch Haniger, right? You get a little of both things. And I think long term, that should be a pretty good fit.
I got one quick thing I know we got to run. I got this little quote right here. I think it fits well. I was just saying it to Macy on a drive to early shoot around this morning. Success is never owned. It is rented. And the rent is due every day.
Oh, wow. That's very inspirational. Did you get that on the Manning cast last night?
Might as well sign that Jared Kelnick, okay? Success is never owned. It is rented, and the rent is due every day. We'll talk about that
we will?
Manning show. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that.
I can't wait.
Okay. I know you loved it.
See you, buddy. Bye. There you go. There's Brock. He joins us every day at 7:45, sometimes just to make me giggle. What can I tell you? Brock makes me chuckle. Why does he even bring that up? Does he think I'm going to be all in on that?
The face you made when he said that.
Well, because he started reading fortune cookie wisdom? Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's like one of those like silly quotes you see on like inspiration poster or something like
Brock
that.
Do you think Brock has posters like that up in his workout room at home?
Yes, on his sport court and everything else.
Buy it at Home Goods.
Yeah, exactly. It's like one of those things that they're making fun of in those progressive commercials, right?
Yeah.
No muss, no fuss or whatever. Those commercials are legitimately funny. So, all right, that's Brock. Every day, 7:45, 9:30 if you miss Brock. And you can always catch it on the podcast. You can get that at 710sports.com or by downloading it. Subscribe to it at Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. All right, is tomorrow literally the first day of fall?
It is, September 22nd.
All right, well, Hasselbeck will be in tomorrow, so we'll be ranking thing with Hasselbeck, which will be good. I think we're going to go with all of the focus in the last week or two here on taunting. We got to have some taunting rankings, I think, from Matt. So we'll do that tomorrow at 9:45 with Matt. Today, though, I think we've got a good one in honor of fall that might make you gag a little. It's next. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Yeah, Matt Hasselbeck will be in here tomorrow at this time, starting at 9. Full hour with Matt, telling stories of his days in and around the league and people that he was around. It was great last week. Just tons of really fun stories, etc. And we'll rank stuff with Matt. He was good at that. I liked his worst locker rooms in the NFL rankings last week.
That was really fun. Yeah.
Really funny.
Because when else are you going to hear about him or see him?
That's right.
That's it. That's what I love about Matt.
Especially the visitor locker room. So as the calendar flips tomorrow to fall, which stinks, I got to be honest. I don't get excited about fall. I love the warm weather. I love the summer. It's not as bad as when the calendar flips to spring around here and you're like, oh, it should be spring. Oh, no, it's not nice at all.
3 months later.
It's still the dead of winter, even though the calendar's flipped to spring. With fall comes pumpkin, apparently. And so for today, the grossest pumpkin-themed foods ranked.
Yeah, I don't understand why pumpkin has to inject itself into everything on grocery store shelves and every chain restaurant. Everybody has a pumpkin thing.
It's pumpkin's fault.
And pumpkin spice in general. Like, why does it all have to be pumpkin pie flavored?
And it's got kind of like that weird spicy pumpkin. Like, it kind of gets into the back of your throat.
Yeah, so starting with Jamba Juice Pumpkin Spice Smoothie.
No.
Just a cold pureed baby food pie?
Do you have the same Jamba Juice order whenever you go in there?
That would imply that I have a Jamba Juice order.
Oh. Wow.
I haven't been to one since high school.
Me either.
Oh, wow. All right. So anyway.
Do you have an Orange Julius order you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I always get a Strawberry Julius if I go there. I haven't been there in a long time, but you can go old school.
Of course, Salk gets a Strawberry Julius at Orange Julius.
I don't like orange that much. Orange is not my favorite flavor. I'd rather go Strawberry Julius.
All right. Pumpkin spice, and this is the worst possibly candy. I don't know if you call it a candy food of all time. Peeps.
Well, that's just combining two gross flavors.
Yeah, what else needs to be said there? Pumpkin spice peeps, don't do it.
These are sweet.
These are, by the way, pumpkin spice flavored foods to either avoid or to gift your enemies. So there's a benefit on both sides.
We've got pumpkin
here.
Jamba Juice and pumpkin peeps.
And pumpkin spice, you ready?
Yeah.
Mac and cheese.
Ew.
I'm gonna stop you on that one. That one doesn't sound as bad to me, only because I really like pumpkin ravioli. It was like the only pumpkin food I really care for.
But not pumpkin spice. Yeah. Is that like dessert mac and cheese?
That's true. Are you sure it's pumpkin spice mac and cheese and not just pumpkin flavored mac and cheese?
I don't make the rules. I just follow them. This is what somebody wrote.
What's the difference? Is pumpkin spice has the sweetness?
I think it has the like...
The brown sugar?
The seasoning you put in pumpkin pie, like nutmeg and coriander.
Yeah, I don't need all that. Yeah.
You know what somebody's never said? Yeah, this needs more nutmeg.
What?
Ever.
Oh,
that is horrible.
Nutmeg's good.
All right, I'm moving on.
All right.
Pumpkin spice, and I'm not a big pumpkin spice beer guy, but I'm certainly not a big pumpkin spice vodka person either. That's a thing.
It is?
That is a thing. Yeah.
What do you mix that with?
Nothing. You pour it out. The garbage. That's what you mix it with.
Straight out. See you later.
Yes, the drain.
Okay.
And the last one, which is probably the worst, and it's a combo. Pumpkin spice hummus, which you can dip into with your pumpkin spice Pringles, which are both things. This should not be things.
Pumpkin spice Pringles?
Pringles.
See, at a certain point, I think they're just putting these things out there as, like, people will buy it as a novelty.
Well, that's what my wife Heather was reading me something about Trader Joe's and all of their pumpkin spice things and the best and the worst. And I guess that their pumpkin spice beer that they were selling at Trader Joe's was so horrifically reviewed. And she was reading me some of the reviews. I think somebody said it smelled like nail polish remover.
Okay.
And it had such a chemical smell to it, and all of the rest of the comments were like, I've got to try this. I've got to go see what this is all about.
I knew I was going to start to get dragged on the nutmeg thing. I just think it's no one thinks.
What about like an apple cider?
I just don't think anything needs more of it.
All right, but a little bit of nutmeg in apple cider is pretty good, isn't it?
I mean, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if I want to go that far or not. It's fall. I'll let it be a thing because it's been a thing before, but pumpkin spice just suddenly has to appear on the scene because lattes were popular.
I'm still thinking about the pumpkin spice Pringles.
Yeah.
Last time you bought Pringles?
I love Pringles.
Really?
That's every road trip snack, man. And I can spit some flower seeds into them after I'm done with the can.
That's true. That is an advantage. And they're sort of neat and tidy.
Perfect. I love them.
Yeah, I like their salt and vinegar. Okay.
Same.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that's for today. Now that it is almost fall, it'll be fall tomorrow. Fall in Seattle, though, kind of like it's still nice here for another month.
I wore shorts yesterday.
Yeah. September is the most underrated month in Seattle.
Seriously. I agree. And global warming has been Seattle's best friend for the late summers.
True. I'll take September over March or April.
Pumpkin spice Twinkies.
June.
Yeah, we saw that. Didn't think it should make. I mean, those ones actually don't sound that bad.
I mean, I think Twinkies are already kind of gross, so just adding pumpkin spice to them seems kind of normal.
Yeah. I don't mind them. I haven't had them in forever, but they're not bad.
All right, let's see what else we got. There's some other, some of these sports questions on here. A lot of people are still upset about the missed PAT from Sunday.
Yeah, I heard yesterday on Jake and Stacey, somebody's like, who are you pinning the loss on? I heard a guy say, special teams.
Come on. First of all, the other team missed a field goal. You missed only an extra point.
He hasn't missed a field goal in forever.
And second of all, you had so many opportunities to overcome that. It's a pretty, even if they had made it, the odds are it still would have, the game would have gone exactly the same way. They just would have needed a 2-point conversion.
And Julio Jones probably should have had a touchdown if you want to go that route.
Right. And I mean, there was a bobbled, was it a punt that he dropped? Is it a punt or is it a kickoff?
DJ Dallas almost dropped one, but he
did. He picked it up. He ended up with bad field position because of it. So I don't know. I'm not buying that one. Are we going to get out of here? We're going to pave the way for Jake and Stacey and their special teams issues, apparently.
Yeah, somebody did.
I got to talk to Stacey at some point. She's the one who was blaming the game on the defense.
Yeah, we'll get her in here.
Can we do that tomorrow? We got Hasselbeck. We might not have time tomorrow.
Oh, maybe sorry, Thursday. Stacey. Hasselbeck's
sorry, Stacey,
getting
bumped for Hasselbeck. Maybe Thursday we can hang with Stacey a little bit and challenge her on that.
Okay.
All right. We got to go. Matt Hasselbeck tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. plus a whole lot more fun. We will talk to you guys at 6 o'clock. Don't forget, we start at 6. This is the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.